On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series! The Twins!
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp. Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
And the Rose strikes out for the seventh time this year. Another strikeout. And Malone has a quick 1-2-3 inning to third base. They've got him picked off. And Johnson is thrown out. And Garcia strikes out number two.
Strikeout number three for Malone.
Flower strikes out again. And he got him.
Strikeout number six for Tommy Malone.
And a lazy fly ball center field. Schaefer's over in a very quick seventh inning for Tommy Malone. Swung on and missed.
Strikeout number seven.
Great performance and a good chance for his first Twins win here today.
Whew. We're all right, folks.
Tommy Malone or Frank Viola
the
yesterday.
The ace of the staff, the sneaky lefty.
Love it.
How about that? Welcome to On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105.
Don't need a clock on that game.
The ticket. No, a couple of things. Al Newman on the line on the phones, buried in Alexandria, Minnesota. How's the view from up in Alec?
Well, actually, I'm in Minnesota or something.
Pick a name, Al.
Couple vowels.
We're doing an expo trying to help promote the Alexandria Anchors baseball team here at this expo today. So I'm there with you guys in studio, and I know we're going to have a great, great show.
How's the traffic? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, there is no traffic, Gene. Just wave them all, buddy.
Hey. Gene is going to be racing up 94, or maybe not so fast, because apparently there's a lot of closures and things. He's got a first pitch in Collegeville at 1 o'clock. I think at some juncture you just pull the pin and cut your losses.
Yes, you do. Just cut your losses. Go for it. But there was no traffic on the way up here, Gene. So,
okay, good.
Hopefully you'll be okay.
That was yesterday.
And probably early. By the way, great show today. Obviously, we're going to take a look at the Twins' first win of the season. Paul Molitor's first as a manager at the big league level. And we have a very special guest in studio. Ron Rabinowitz is here. He is known as Jackie Robinson and the Kid. We will be talking about his incredible story as his relationship evolved. It really kind of started from a meeting at a ballpark in Milwaukee, and then it continued to grow from there. So we're going to get in depth with that. And, of course, Jackie Robinson Day is coming up in Major League Baseball in a few days. So Al Newman, of course, reached out and made this happen. And so we're looking very forward to having him in our second segment. One thing about, I have to say, the highlights, really good to hear that Bert wasn't fired.
A little bit over the top, you think, by the Twin front office? Just a little?
Well, I mean, really, do you really need to say that? What did you call David Helmer, our producer? What did you call Detroit?
I said Detroit is basically a third world country in the
U.S. I didn't say that, but you did.
Well, he was just making a comment about the skyline. Was it an inaccurate comment?
Well, okay, have we gotten so touchy that you can't be funny? I mean, I thought that was kind
of funny. That's part of Bert's stick,
well,
isn't it?
I tell you what, guys, Gino, you and I have driven around in that city on some buses that...
We stayed in Dearborn when we played. We didn't stay in downtown Detroit. Why was that?
But you got the governor checking in. I mean, shouldn't you be governing a state?
What's kind of scary there back in the day, I don't know how much improvements they've made, but it was a little different.
Have you seen the urban meadows? But the truth is, shouldn't you be governing a state and managing those urban meadows and not worrying about Bert Blylevin's tweets? I mean, come on. I thought it was kind of funny.
It was funny. I mean, it was a bad ball game, you know, bad series, and we had made a funny comment
just
on.
Vile.
Just
vile. So if you were calling those games, you guys, in Detroit, how tough would that have been to get up each day and watch that and commentate on that?
Well, listen, you never want to, you know, form an opinion early on in the season. You want to give the guys a month to find out what kind of ball club they've got. But after the last 4 years, you were hoping for some optimism.
Sure.
And, you know, for the first three games of the season, there wasn't a lot to be optimistic about. Nobody was hitting the ball real well. The pitching was, used to the ball well the first game, you have to admit.
He just didn't
get any run support. But after that, Gibson and Nolasco, we can talk about Nolasco's.
Right. You know, Gino, you're exactly right. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but I was watching that game with Nolasco, and I'm going, this guy's 86-88. What's wrong with his arm?
He was throwing some good high school curveballs, I'll tell you, Al. Good high school curveballs.
Yes, it was just rolling right on in there. And, you know, you talk about the first few games. Well, when you get kicked in the stomach with the Santana deal, and then you watch two games like that, you've got to wipe your brow and go, man, it's going to be a long year. But they did get a win yesterday.
Yeah, you know, you talk about this. This is a term I've never heard before, a spike in the elbow. What does that mean exactly? What is that?
When you let it go, you know it's not coming back.
Okay, well, I mean, it's like, did someone hammer one in there or something? Or, yeah. But
when, as a hitter, you go, only thing you've got on the ball is his hand. You know, that's pretty much what that
but
is.
I've never been a pitcher, obviously, but I just don't understand going through the whole spring training where he pitched well and had no obvious pain or injury, and then the first game he pitches where it counts, the spike occurs. I just don't understand how that happens.
You know what that is. That's called Cabrera Martinez. You know, pitching through that lineup, and then sometimes guys just back off.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a couple of guys back in our day that were somewhat similar to that, and I'm not going to name any names, but they didn't want the ball when it got tough, that's for sure.
Well, he gives Trevor May an opportunity to go. He gets called up. Now he's the opening day starter.
Well, these guys have been sitting around waiting. They've definitely been sitting around waiting for their opportunities. And, you know, I mean, we've talked about this our first two programs, that at some point those guys will be here. They're going to have opportunities. Nobody's going to stay healthy the entire year. Well, now is the time. And, you know, if you believe you should be there, this is the opportunity to do it. With Nolasco, it's a 15-day DL, an inflamed elbow. There's no structural damage from what we understand, so you know, we'll see what happens there. But the elbow was an issue with him last year too. So is this a recurring thing?
The weather gets warmer.
Oh, you think it's a warm weather thing?
The weather gets warmer.
Here we come, Miami.
Yeah, you know, the weather gets warmer in a couple of weeks, and he doesn't have to worry about that chill. You know, if you didn't have sleeves on, probably because of a comfort thing. But the weather gets warmer, so hopefully he'll be okay.
Here's the trade. We're going to get a 6'7" journeyman left-hand minor leaguer and a player to be named later.
You guys are too down. You know, it's only three games, four games. We're 1-3 still.
Let's go to the positive. Obviously, the game in Chicago. I mean, it really felt as though a change of scenery really was a refreshing thing. And I think you guys can agree that, you know, in baseball, you have to have short-term memories. You have to erase the slate. New start in Chicago. They shut them out 6-0. They get an incredible pitching performance from Malone. You know, they did score the 6 runs, but really they hung a lot on the base paths, left a lot of guys on base. But Malone was terrific.
He was unbelievable. After the first inning, I think it was nerves, obviously. Each one of the pitchers that Twins have had the first few games have had a little bit of nerve issue in the first few innings. But he settled down, threw a lot of strikes, had a great breaking ball, and came up and in a lot on the right hand after trying to start slowing away. So he fooled them. But, you know, you look at who you're playing as well. The White Sox, Tigers, lineups. Tigers have a very formidable lineup. White Sox average at best. And so it's a good time. Malone stepped up, did a great job. I was really happy for Paul Mahler to get that first win, get off the schneid a little bit. Now I think he, as a manager, can relax a little bit and just watch his team play.
That whole locker room settled down after that win yesterday, I guarantee it. And again, Chicago free swingers, you got a guy who mixes the pitches in and out and off speed. They're going to swing over it and swing around it. It was good to get that win and to see some smiles in that dugout.
Speaking of smiles, it almost seemed as though Paul Molitor was weeping in his post-game conference after the first win. Let's listen.
Well, you know, it feels good, obviously, to get the first one out of the way. Things didn't start the way that we had hoped there in Detroit. So you come here and you try to get a fresh start. And we talk so much about starting pitching and how much that influences your club. And Tommy was fantastic today. And the guys had enough offense to make it hold up. And a little bit of a crazy ending, but we'll take it.
Al, was he feeling pressure a little bit to get that out of the way?
Well, you know what? While I was listening to that, I was thinking about when you're back as a kid and the way you picked your teams, you threw the bat to the guy and you grabbed it and then he put his hand on top of yours. Well, Paulie finally is a major league manager and he got a chance to pick his team and he got his first win. It's got to be exciting.
It is exciting. And one of the other topics that he talks about are the base running. And, you know, Torrey Hunter picks up the first stolen base and he commented on that one as well.
Yeah. Well, we could have took a poll who was going to get our first stolen base. I don't know if Torrey would have been up there on that list, but, you know, we get certain matchups. We're going to let people go. You know, I think it's an important part of our team. Torrey took advantage of the guy not paying much attention there. It led to us being able to add on some runs there in the ninth inning.
Details that are very important to him.
Well, when you're not hitting the ball very well as a manager, you try to create a little bit of entertainment on the bases when you do get on there. And, you know, I didn't think Torrey would be the first guy. I thought Santana or Schaefer would be the guy. But, you know, doesn't pay too much attention to him, gets a good jump, and steals a base.
Al, how about...
Yeah, and if you're not hitting, you've got to create, you know, I shouldn't say force the issue, but I call it creating offense, and you force guys to be contact hitters. I hate to talk about back in the day, but we did a lot of that where guys would take off, and you had to protect them. It opens up holes. Some guys don't want to do that, but, you know, this is a team that does strike out quite a bit. And to force the issue, force them to make contact.
Al, how about this one, too? I mean, from the overall team perspective, Danny Santana with the tough start sits down. Escobar is playing. This is a guy who's going old school on the paternity leave. Well, not quite old school because he's actually going to drop in and watch the birth and bust, but he's not taking the 3 days off. But that's a commitment to his club, isn't it?
Sure it is. It sure it is. They're saying, you know, I want to be here. I've worked hard. I'm looking to be an everyday player somewhere on the field. And I'll be honest with you, all of a sudden now Arcia can go back on a ball and make a play. And that's because there's other guys that can play.
Shocking, isn't it?
And that'll make him play better. But, yes, it means that he's determined to be on that squad every day.
Yeah, but Escobar's got to say, I'm not no dummy. My guy in front of me, Santana, is really scuffling with the bat. If
yes.
I play and do well, maybe I'll take that position away. I don't think that's going to happen early in the season, but you want to play when your guy in front of you is struggling, no question.
Well, and his fiance, that's about ready to give birth, is no dummy. She said, you don't need to be here. Just get your butt back down to Chicago.
Right.
But she did. That's part of the story. And, I think, you know, she's like, what are you going to do here? You know, so you'll be home in another day. Just go play. And you are right. It's about competition and seizing opportunities. Al, real quick, from this perspective today, can the Twins jump on this today? Pelfrey gets the start, the much anticipated Mike Pelfrey start.
Well, he's definitely determined. He's got a young guy that pitched well the day before, and if this is going to be a 500 or above team, you've got to take it and say, okay, I'm the next guy up. I've got to withstand. I'm not saying throw a shutout for six or seven innings, but keep the game close until your offense can turn things on.
We'll be back with more. Ron Rabinowitz in studio right here. Can't wait for this story. Tell a friend, tweet it out, get it there. This should be a great one. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. A little Creed for you here,
Where'd
David
come
Howard.
From?
Are you okay with it? Was this in your wheel?
You might want to call me the week before we do these shows.
Okay, did you hear he said, where did this come from? Like, do you know what the name of the song is?
My Sacrifice.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Well, there's a guy that sacrificed a lot in his life to really pave the way in baseball.
That's why you are good at what you do, Pete.
Well, I've been termed an artist. Oh, that brought a giggle out of Ron Rabinowitz here in studio. Not so sure on that one. We are so pleased to bring in Ron Rabinowitz. He, of course, is, as a young boy, was befriended and befriended Jackie Robinson in an incredible story in a relationship that continued on. And what we're going to talk about today is the letters that have been sent to him and the relationship he had with Jackie, still has with his surviving wife, Rachel, right now, and really how it impacted so many different things on so many cultural levels here. Obviously, Jackie Robinson Day is coming up this upcoming week, and we wanted to be ahead of the curve. And thank you to Al Newman, who's in Alexandria on the phone with us right now at a fundraiser, for helping set this one up. And first of all, good morning to you, Ron.
Thanks, Pete. Glad to be here. Gene, Al, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting
me. Ron, thank you very much, man. It's awesome. I wish I could be there with you. But I was telling these guys about your story, although it's nationally known already. But I was just thinking how good of a guy you are to do this for us today. But not only when I got a chance to meet you, I understood how Jackie could befriend you at such a young age.
Well, thanks, Al. I appreciate that.
So let's get to the meat here, Ron. Obviously, sure. Not every kid who's 7 years old meets a professional baseball player in the locker room area, but then becomes lifelong friends with that person. Can you take us through how all of this occurred?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, my dad used to
read me stories about Jackie, and he said to me one day, he said, how would you like to meet him someday? And I said, boy, would I love that. Well, unbeknownst to me, he wrote Jackie a letter, and he didn't want to tell me in case Jackie didn't respond. He didn't want me disappointed. And he wrote back with an autograph picture, and he said, next time the club's in Milwaukee playing the Braves, you would love to meet me. At that time, the Atlanta Braves were the Milwaukee Braves. So we went to a Dodger Brave game, and it was the first baseball game I was ever at that I couldn't wait for it to end because I knew what was going to happen later.
That's awesome.
And I went down to the locker room, waited for him to come out, and when he came out, I ran up to him with about 50 other kids who were wanted autographs, and I said, Jackie, I'm Ronnie Rabinowitz. I said, do you remember me? He said, sure I do. My dad standing over my shoulder, he said, sure, Jackie, with the thousands of letters you get, how would you remember? He said, no, I remember your dad wrote me on lawyer stationery. My father was an attorney. From that time on, we became the very dearest of friends, and all through my growing up years, he'd write letters to me and write back to me. You know, I'd write to him.
So from that, obviously, he meets a bunch of kids for autographs after games, and
right.
But there was something there for you that really kept cultivating this. What were the next steps after that meeting, and who really precipitated the next letter?
Well, he said to me, keep in touch, and I thought, my God, he wants to hear from me, you know.
Yeah.
So I wrote him a letter, and I wrote Jackie Robinson, Stamford, Connecticut, no address, no zip code. He got him, and he'd write Ronnie Rabinowitz, Sheboygan, Wisconsin, no address, no zip code, and I'd get him. You know, it was just amazing. It really was. And, you know, I got my first letter, and, you know, I told some of my friends, I said, well, I got a letter from Jackie Robinson. Yeah, sure. They said, yeah, I got a letter from Donald Duck, you know. So
yeah,
I pull out the letter, and they said, oh, my God, you know. So a lot of my friends got to know about this, and I used to take them with me to Milwaukee to see Jackie, to meet him, and I wanted to share the, you know, experience.
Well, and some of the things that stand out in your relationship is what you've talked about are the differences that you two had. You were white, he was black. You were Jewish, he was Christian. You were a kid, he was an adult. You were a Democrat or from a Democrat family,
yeah,
right?
Right?
He was a Republican.
Right.
So, I mean, and even in your letters, and we'll get into those a little bit later on in the segments here, but, you know, he talks about the Ike Wynn over Adlai Stevenson, all
right.
kinds of things like
right,
this.
Right. Yeah, he'd write a sweet letter to me, and then he'd say, by the way, such and such, he talked politics. And he'd say, I don't know why I brought that up. I guess it's just my way of saying hi to your dad.
That's terrific. So what is it about the differences, though, that you feel as you look back on it now? What you know, you always say act, but there clearly was something in you from which I think he felt as though he had the ability to really open his heart up to communicate all of the things that he had to go through as a player and a person.
Right, right. Well, he was very real comfortable with us, Pete, and he loved my dad, he loved me, and I, of course, loved him, you know. As a kid, I loved him because he was helping my Dodgers win pennants, you know. But as I got older, I realized how much more than just baseball he was, what he did for this country and what he did for this world and how he changed it himself, you know. You got to realize this was like 18 years before the Civil Rights Movement. It was way before Martin Luther King. He was still a teenager, way before Rosa Parks. He was alone. This was just Jackie alone. It was amazing. I was interviewed. I was out to they brought me out to L.A. I was interviewed by Larry King not too long ago. And he was telling me that the first time he introduced, he had an interview with Martin Luther King. He said, this is Martin Luther King, the founder of the Civil Rights Movement. And he stopped him and he said, no, Larry, he says, I'm not the founder. Jackie Robinson was.
So, and from that perspective, how difficult was it for Jackie to be that founder?
Pretty difficult. I mean, first of all, you know, he couldn't fight back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the bigots wanted. They wanted him to fight back. I mean, there'd have been a riot or something on the field or a big fight. They said, see, he's nothing but a troublemaker. Get him out of here. So that's what they wanted. And Branch Rickey and he hadn't agreed that he would not fight back. And the only way he could fight back was by stealing a base, hitting a home run, driving those pitchers crazy. And that's what he did, and did it well.
Gene, you were talking off air before we got on that the mere nature of your being as an athlete would be to fight back, and the respect you had from across the table was legit and real. Talk about how hard that would be for you as a player to
We were talking around before we got on the air, Pete, about obviously his baseball ability allowed him to do what he did, but it was inner strength as a man. Like Ron says, he couldn't fight back. Well, what kind of guy hears stuff, the vitriol from the stands day in and day out, walking off the field to the bus, hearing the vitriol, and not have the gumption to say, you know, a few choice words to the individual, or throw a punch.
Engage.
And engage in that individual. And like Ron said, that's the bullies want you to engage. And
sure they do.
To have him at the inner strength to hold that back allowed him to do what he did. But I wouldn't have been able to do that if I was a black man during that time. I can just tell you flat out, I would be throwing haymakers. And that would have put me in trouble.
Sure.
But he had the inner strength to do that, and tremendous, tremendous respect for what he accomplished. Tremendous.
Al, how about you? Did we lose Al?
Yeah.
We lost Al. Shoot, the all-important question there for Al Newman, too. Well, anyway, so we'll continue forward on the discussion. So did he share some of the things emotionally that he had to deal with as far as these things of baiting and how things, you know, how he was being attempted to be dragged into this? Did he share that part of it with
you
ever?
Yes, he did.
What was it like?
I mean, he would tell me stories. One particular time, this was actually after he had retired from baseball. He used to come back to Wisconsin every once in a while and speak, and he'd let us know that he was coming, and we'd spend time with him. So we picked him up at the airport in Milwaukee, and he had just flown in from Birmingham, Alabama. And he had made a speech there, and he went to the airport and was waiting for his plane and to come to Milwaukee. There was a big sign in the airport waiting room, said, "Whites only." And he sat down. And the police came, and they were going to arrest him. And they found out he was Jackie Robinson. They let him go. But he was really disturbed. He got off the plane. He said, "Ronnie, you know, if my name would have been John Jones or Paul Smith or anybody else, I'd have been in jail today because of the color of my skin." He says, "Those are things we have to change."
And what kind of success did he have in that, from your perspective?
I think it was tremendous respect. I mean, he changed this world. I mean, you know, they say that Babe Ruth changed baseball. Jackie Robinson changed America, and he did it alone. It was amazing.
Moving to the next steps of that, from your relationship,
right?
He's at your 10-year-old birthday party, right?
Yeah.
And he's singing happy birthday to you.
Yeah, can you believe it?
No, I wouldn't be able to believe it. But then you're at the point now where you're saying, well, geez, I'm getting to know this guy, and it's kind of becoming, I mean, I'm sure it's thrilling, but at some level, now it's becoming beyond that, correct?
Right, right.
So at what point are you realizing, you know, I'm in the middle of something big here?
I just continued on. I mean, I loved him as a person, and I respected him as a human being. And, I loved him because, he was helping my Dodgers win pennants. But I started realizing that there was so much more to this man than just baseball. He loved kids. He loved people. He was good that way. One time he came out of the locker room in Milwaukee, and I never asked for an autograph or anything. I mean, it was always, give me. I didn't do that. I wasn't a pest. And I would always get those things. So he comes out of the locker room, and the team is going on the bus to go back to the hotel because the series isn't finished yet. So I'm walking with him. He's signing kids' autographs. Guys are getting on the bus. Here comes a priest with a whole parish full of kids, and they all want autographs. He's standing and signing and signing. Pretty soon the guys on the bus are opening the windows. "Come on, Jackie, you're holding us up." You know what he did? He went to the bus driver, and he said, "You know what? Take the guys back to the hotel. I'll take a cab." And he stood there, and he signed every kid's autograph.
Imagine that. So that was my next question. As far as his reception with teammates and their perspective of him, he obviously brought a little bit of attention to the team, right? And this is a first-time situation. How was he received? I mean, I know we saw in the movie a little bit of that.
Right.
But did he ever really say, "Hey, look, this is how it really was"?
Well, at first, he wasn't received very well.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there was actually a petition that they didn't want him to play. And Branch Rickey, you know, said, "Okay, guys, you don't want to play with the Dodgers, I'll trade you. But he's staying, you know. So, I mean, but afterwards they realized how good he was and that he was helping the team win. And in 47, they won the pennant. I mean, they started winning it. They won 47, 49, 51, 52, I mean, 53. And in 55, on my 10th birthday, they beat the damn Yankees for the first time, World Series.
How was that day for you?
Great. That was terrific. So, that was terrific.
So you definitely have your passion for the Dodgers goes beyond just like in the blue and white.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more. This is a soul thing, isn't it?
It really is. It still
even
is.
Though it's L.A. Yeah.
Even though it's L.A.
You can get
even when
that.
It was Brooklyn to L.A.
You can get past. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
We're going to keep you on for the next segment, if you
don't
mind. We're going to continue on with Ron Rabinowitz. He, of course, is part of the story, Jackie Robinson and the Kid. He is the Kid right now, telling us how it was. We'll be back with more On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. The good times are rolling here.
Love it.
Right here on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket, the On Deck Radio Show. And our very own Al Newman is probably not having too many good times rolling right now. The phone lines keep
sabotaging Al.
I asked you off the air before we came on, is Al going to be fired up? I mean, this is really his guest right here. He sends me a text
you.
After he gets cut off. He sends me a text and said, you guys do a great job. Keep rolling. And I'm like, is he mad? Al, Gene said, there's no doubt. Oh, Al's a beauty. So he got cut again. So we'll try and restore that. But if you're just joining us, tell a friend. This is great stuff. On Deck Radio, we have Ron Rabinowitz from the days of Jackie Robinson and the Kid. You do some national speaking on this, right?
Yeah, I've gone all over the country speaking to colleges, university schools, organizations, companies.
What have you learned from that experience?
Well, it's amazing because a lot of the companies that I talk to, they just wanted me to come in and tell the story, and they're just amazed by it. You know, one person came up to me one day and he said, you know, yours is a story that only happens in dreams. And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I was very fortunate.
What is the main message when you do these engagements that comes out in your speaking engagements?
Especially when I'm talking to kids, Pete, I want to let kids know that how much I loved him and how people are people. There's good and bad in everybody, but it's not because of the color of their skin or their religion. I think that's very important.
You know, Pete, Ron, I think one of the messages, too, as a former player, and, you know, as a player, you get autograph requests periodically, and
sure.
Certain kids ask for a letter back. And, you know, I will be the first to say I didn't write every kid back. I mean,
I
sent them the card. But for me, listening to Ron's story, this is a guy who's going through tremendous, tremendous life-changing things, not only for himself and his family, but for the world in the game of baseball. But giving him the time, making time for Ron in a handwritten letter, and you've got the book here, and this tremendous amount of letters that he wrote, handwritten, obviously, during those days, and taking the time out to send Ron a message. And I look back as, you know, players today, I hope they hear Ron's story and Jackie's story regarding Ron, because every little thing you do to a young guy or a young girl who sends you a request lasts a lifetime.
Absolutely.
It's influential.
Mm-hmm.
It lasts
a lifetime. Just
exactly.
Imagine. Yeah.
Well, here's an example. By the way, Al, great to have you back on board. The phone lines are a little wonky here today.
Well, you know what, guys? My heart is just going out to Ron and the era, you know, with Jackie Robinson. And the thing that, one of the questions I've always wanted to ask you, Ron, was, you know, in your heart of hearts, when you're conversating and writing these letters back and forth, you felt like you were right there with him, I imagine. I can't even imagine. I know the feeling was a tremendous feeling. You felt like you had a friend that was changing the world.
Right.
Can you share that with us?
Right. I didn't realize it until later on. I mean, as a kid, you know, he was my hero, and that was it. But later on, I realized how much more than just baseball he was. What he did for this country, he was amazing. Just an amazing man.
Some of that heartfelt feeling in the writings or this, I want to share an excerpt. This
sure.
is actually in his penmanship. And it's pretty impressive. The first paragraph, I think, is incredible. He said, Dear Ronnie, it was nice getting your letter. We have just returned from a nice trip to Japan, and the people over there changed our minds about a lot of things. It is the most friendly country I've seen, and I was amazed at the way we were received in every city. Of course, that's post-World War II, right. And there's a lot of angst going back and forth between the countries and the societies, but right. He didn't feel that as much. And so when I read that paragraph, I think, I wonder, there's conceptions and perceptions and beliefs and prejudices and things like that you can have from culture to culture.
Sure.
So there he is representing the American culture in that, which could have been ugly because, right. You know, the bomb was the bomb, right?
Right, right.
But he didn't feel that.
No,
and
that's true.
I wonder how much that helped him understand where we were or weren't as a country.
Yeah, I think it helped him a lot, I mean, to understand it. And I think he expressed that to other people when he came back, that was the past, and we have to move on. And I believe that. You know, he was a real hero. He was a real role model. He never drank. He never smoked. He never took drugs. And he never refused to sign a kid's autograph.
Something in here shows a little vulnerability, I would think. And I think that's what made this thing work in him with you, honestly.
Yeah.
And here's one of the words he wrote in that same letter, next paragraph. It's really nice getting letters from you because you always seem to have a nice word when it's needed. I guess everyone in the public's eye wants to have a friend like you. And believe me, I am no exception. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your standing by me, and I only hope I can always be worthy of your friendship.
Isn't that nice how he said that? It's just, I'm so honored that he chose me to be his friend, you know.
Do you think a guy in today's world would humble himself to tell a young person that? Of any, not an athlete of anything.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Gene?
I would hope so. I think it's a very moving story, and I would hope that there's people out there like Jackie now who, you know, create the ultimate sacrifice for himself and his family. And, you know, we talk about fans nowadays as being so, so passionate and why they get so much into their team. Well, if you've got guys like Jackie Robinson or somebody on your team that's reached out, sent back a letter or a baseball card with a little bit of an inscription on it, that's why that person is so passionate about that team, because of what the team has given back
sure.
to them.
It's so true. One time he took me into the locker room, and you know, it was crazy because we'd wait for him to come out of the locker room, and there was nothing to do. You know, you're kind of in the bowels of the stadium, and there's gray walls and everything. The only thing you could do was, there was a big sign on the locker room door. It said, warning, do not enter, trespassing, you can go to jail. And there was legal jargon, you know. So just to kill time, we used to read that over and over and over. So one day he comes out, and he says, come here. And he takes me by the hand, and he takes me into the locker room. So all of a sudden I said, oh, I'm going to jail. And he laughed. He says, no, you're with me. You don't have to worry.
Yeah,
he took a brand new ball out of a bag. He took me from locker to locker to locker. All my heroes, Duke Snyder, Pee Wee Reese, Roy Campanella, Carl Ferrillo, Sandy Koufax was a rookie that year. They were all signing this ball. They were patting me on the back, shaking my hand. I was like numb. He was so busy getting autographs for me that he actually forgot to sign the ball himself. But I got many autographs from him.
That's pretty amazing. And speaking of autographs, Gene, can you recall your first autograph from a professional athlete when you were a kid?
Bobby Mercer. Bobby Mercer was my favorite player growing up in New York. He played center field for the Yankees, and I did cry when they traded him for mm-hmm. Bobby Bonds. I cried in bed that night. But anyway, yeah, I went to a charity situation where Bobby was the guest speaker, and I went up to him in a long line of kids, and he was very gracious and signed it, and I have that ball today. And that's something every kid remembers.
The first
big league guy who shook your hand or said hi to you. You could be in a, you know, 50,000 kids with him, and if he says hi, mm-hmm. you think that hi is going directly to you.
Mine was Rod Carew. I'll never forget it. He still is my baseball hero forever. And it was Jersey Day, Metropolitan Stadium, Chicago White Sox. Twins win 19-12 after going down 8-2 in the first inning. Glenn Adams with the big grand slab. But the thing about it was, I don't know what made me do it. I was probably 10, 11. I stood up. We were in the first base, you know, box seats at the time there, right even with the best. doing infield or warm-ups, and there was people everywhere. Nobody was coming to Twins games in that area, and it was sold out because of the Carew jersey. And so I just stood up, and I said, Mr. Carew, and I just kind of raised my right hand, and he walked right over, and I gave him my program with his picture on it. That was the year he was flirting with 400.
Yeah.
He signs it, and then what it did is it created the avalanche of like 10,000 more kids. Yeah. But he stood there and just jammed through all of them. But that was the culture of that day, where it was really easy to call guys over, and they, you know, they'd see a kid and they would do it. But I don't know if you know how much of that like sparked my love for the game even more.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He was a class act. Rod and I are friends, and he's just a wonderful guy. And there's a lot of them that are good. I mean, Torrey Hunter, Gene Larkin.
But it's true. Like,
Al Newman.
Al Newman. That's right.
Athletes get bad names, and rightly so in certain circumstances.
Sure.
But, you know, that one bad apple should not eliminate all the good guys in the game.
Absolutely.
Another question for you. And, man, this is going way too fast. I can't believe it. But if people wanted to get your information, Ron, how would they go about that?
As far as...
There's a documentary that's out. Or are you still speaking? Or
yes, I am.
How would they contact you for that?
Give me a call. I have a cell phone number. 612-597-0314. Or ronrabinovitz42 at gmail.com.
I'm going to have a few options for you. You know what? He'd be great to have speak at a fundraiser for these American Legion baseball clubs.
I'd love it.
We could get some. I got one in mind for you.
Okay, great.
Options. We'll get it figured out. Wonderful,
Thank you, Ron.
Time having you
here. Thank you for inviting me.
It was great. Fun. We're going to have you back.
Okay, I'd love it.
If you'd be willing. Thank you.
Okay.
When we come back, our very own Tim Kolomainen is going to join us. We're going to take a look at the top 10 games of the week. And it won't be the Moorhead Spuds. I can promise you that, Gene Larkin. All that coming up on Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. We're working this one, Gene. You know why?
You like that journey.
This is a theme. No, this is a theme song. This is for the Twins. This will be in this spot the entire year. And actually, I think they should run out.
You'll never stop.
I don't think we should knock the cover off the ball. We're going to win, Twins. We're going to score. Watch the baseball score. You're working this every time. They're running out. Far, but it's all Twins.
Did you give that radio voice when you were talking to Rod Carew when you were 9 years old?
You know what? To that point, I will never forget my first exposure to Bob Casey. It was,
ladies and gentlemen,
for the Twins. I was like, is this a real voice? I remember being like,
he was the best. Case was the best. He made the pregame so much fun during BP and infield. He was a great guy.
Back in the days of the Met Stadium, it was a staple where they'd be just, I think it was Sue Nelson pumping out Sweet Georgia Brown. It was just classic. So how great was Ron Rabinovitz? It was awesome having him on here. We didn't even scratch the surface. He told us there was a play written and performed in St. Paul.
I wish I had known.
I no clue.
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
Great story.
And he's right here.
Yeah, it's a tremendous story. And Jackie Robinson, you know, you can't give the man enough superlatives. He's just a true American hero. And the fact that Ron has gotten to know him, or did get to know him at such a very young age and through adulthood, is just phenomenal.
And the big topic that I wanted to get to that we ran out of time on was, you know, there's, what, 8.5% of the players in Major League Baseball within the last couple of years were African-American. And, you know, I mean, you can almost say the same about Caucasian.
Yeah, and it's too bad Al, you know, the phones are messed up today, because Al could have it be a great voice to hear on that topic. But
we're going to follow up, when Al's in studio next week. And, you know, we'll probably
never
delve
run out
into
of topics with you, Pete.
No, we'll delve into that a little bit deeper. And when Al is here, not raising money for his, what's their nickname in that team?
I don't know.
Tim Kolomainen, are you on board?
I'm on board, yeah. You got me.
Look at that.
Timmy's stepping up this week, buddy.
Hey, the phones work now, don't they? They didn't work for Al all day. Now they're working for you.
Well, you know, I just upgraded my phone, so maybe it's on my end.
Oh, you're blaming Al. It's an equipment user error. Got it. Tim, there's some high school baseball that's in full swing. Gene pointed out that the top 10s are in the Minneapolis Star Tribune right now for the baseball teams. And we've got a matchup against number 1 and number 2. I believe it's on Thursday of next week with Eden Prairie and Lakeville North.
You are correct, yeah. You know, when I started looking at the games this week, there's actually, I mean, that's obviously the premier game of the week. But there's like one of those in each class. That's the premier in 3A, and we've got a really good one in 2A and one in single A also.
Who do you have in the two?
Kind of a fun week. We start off full steam here.
Who do you have in the two?
Well, the 2A, we've got Rochester Lourdes and Casson Manorville playing, and they're both in the top five. I think Lourdes is number five right now, and Casson Manorville is number three. So they go head-to-head on Saturday afternoon. And then in single A, we've got number one New Ulm Cathedral playing number three Springfield on Tuesday night.
The Tigers.
So, yeah, we're kicking off the year with some possible state championship kind of games here.
You know, it's interesting. Baseball is played in more than just the metro, as I like to say. And when you get to the southern part of the state, southeastern, southwestern, you know, Gene, that's where a lot of that town ball, I mean, that's, yeah. You know, the Mud Hens and that,
yep.
They love the game.
Man, I love small town baseball. I try to go out as much as I can during the summertime to watch the summer programs play. And obviously, I'm coaching Edina, so I have the ability to do that once in a while. But, you know, the stadiums at Jordan, phenomenal. Watched place to play.
New Ulm.
New Ulm, again, you know, even up north a little bit in Grand Rapids. Great opportunity to play. Good
Do you
town.
Get your teams to those communities?
I go to the Grand Rapids tournament, yep, every year. So we try to get a good perspective on what's going out there in the cities.
Tim, from the overall health of the metro area, we're seeing some teams get off to quick starts. I think it's fair to say things can change as they go. I think a team that has people raising an eyebrow is Eastridge right now.
Yeah, you know, that's a team that people have been talking to me about. You know, I didn't know a lot about them coming into this, doing this baseball book. And a lot of people were telling me, hey, that's a team to watch out for this year. And they lost a few guys, but they've got some guys back. In looking at it, Sam Cobbs, he's a senior in that lineup and just a really quick kid. I mean, just trouble on the base pass, really, really puts a lot of pressure on the pitcher and the catcher. They got a young guy, a sophomore coming up too, that's supposed to be pretty elite, a middle infielder named Max Gamm. So, yeah, I mean,
Bax?
Really good.
Is that his first name, Bax?
Is it Bax with a B or is it Max?
Max.
Oh, okay. Max. You kind of went into your Marv Albert Bax. Bax.
Well, you're inspiring me, man. I heard your discussion there. I started to get excited about this.
Well, so that, you know, Gene, how good would Woodbury be if they didn't have an Eastridge? I mean, they're cut in half. I guess I'm getting to the Eden Prairie factor.
Wow, you want to throw that topic out already,
well,
huh? The first
we gave it. But I mean, no, I'm not saying they should cut in half or anything like that.
Sure,
but
it hurts any school that you have to divide the population, and you're probably losing quite a few athletes. But, you know, I think it gives more kids an opportunity to play at the highest level of high school baseball. So I think it's a good thing. I mean, you know, especially the larger communities. We always talk about, you know, I raised my children in Eden Prairie, and, you know, they have one school. There was a referendum years ago, and they decided to stick with the one. It probably would have helped out that community to have two schools. And Edina used to have two schools that went to one, and let's talk about that going forward, you know. So,
what do you think in that whole thing? Do you think it's better to have smaller with opportunities and get the room smaller? I mean, is it a nickel here, dime there? It's another building. There's more cost.
If you're a top five player, does it matter to you? But
nope.
If you're a top 15 player, sure, it matters to you. So it really depends upon how your child is rated in the community. If he's 15, he's not going to be a top 12 guy and not make the varsity. Yeah, you want the opportunity. You might have to go to a private school situation. But if you're a top five, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Bring on the world. So it's a tough question to answer. I don't think there's a right answer because each family is unique.
Tim, you see a lot of that covering corner to corner, the smallest of small and the largest of large. Really what Gene says makes a lot of sense. Do you have any thoughts on that as well?
Well, I was thinking, you know, just in the metro area alone, you've had different school districts have a different response to that. You know, obviously Eden Prairie has stuck as one school, and they seem to be consistent with that. And then Lakeville. I mean, we're talking about number one game this week, Lakeville
right.
North and Eden Prairie. Eden Prairie's a school district that stayed together, and Lakeville's one that split up. And, you know, it doesn't appear to have really hurt the Lakeville programs too much. They're still, you know, both programs made the state tournament last year, and you know, obviously, you've got twice as many opportunities for those kids down at Lakeville now than you had about 10 years ago.
You know, it's interesting, as I'm going to weave in the Gopher report here, too, as I was watching them shut out Nebraska last night by a score of 3-0 in a well-pitched game, the broadcasters of the Big Ten Network were very comfortable in their knowledge about Eden Prairie as a baseball producer. Gene, were you surprised that they would know that? And what is it? Is it numbers? Why are the kids seeming to be jumping into the collegiate ranks from Eden Prairie, it seems, as much as or more than anybody.
Any community will tell you that it's the travel situation before you even get to that high school program. How you develop the kids at a younger age. How many teams are you able to have at travel based on numbers? You want to keep the number big, obviously, when they're young. You want more kids committed to the sport. Right now, lacrosse is taking a lot of baseball kids, soccer, you know. So I think it's just the travel programs. If you've got very good developmental programs, you have a pretty good opportunity going forward to create a good high school culture. You try to create a sports culture, winning culture at the high school level, but that starts at the younger kids.
Well, and one way to get started with the younger kids is to have what I feel is the appropriate leadership structure to deliver those opportunities. Tim, I think more opportunity yields to more players.
No, absolutely. I mean, you give kids an opportunity to improve their skills and play a little bit. It's a whole lot different than sitting on the bench and watching other people do it.
We got about 45 seconds. Give me your other top games in the Class 3A for this week that you see this week.
Yeah, I've got a couple of Creighton Durham Hall road games that I think look pretty interesting.
Kimmy O'Neill.
Powerhouse programs, right? They traveled to Moundsview, the two-time defending 3A state champion, on Wednesday night. And then we mentioned the Eastridge game. They go to Eastridge on Friday. So that's another top one. And here's one, too. Here's a couple of games, teams that maybe aren't as highly ranked or maybe lost a few guys from last year. Hill Murray at Matamidi on Wednesday. I really like that one. And then Anoka at Totino Grace on Monday, too. That's another favorite one.
The Totino Grace Eagles.
Some good kids there. Yeah, Ben Mazenga is going to the Gophers. He's a center fielder, real speedy.
Have you seen him play football?
Defensive center fielder.
Have you seen that guy play football?
He's
good.
Yep, multi-sport.
He's an athlete. He can run. He has got some mitts. yeah, no question. They've got a good one in that young man. He's a great player. Tim, we're going to be checking in with you in the coming weeks. We're running out of time here on today's program. We want to thank you for joining us and wish you the best of weeks ahead.
Always. Way to step up this week, Tim. Nice job.
You got it, yeah. I know what games are happening this week. I'm not at a loss.
Oh, Gene throws a little snapper there. Thanks, Tim. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Thanks, Pete.
Gene, Twins, this week, home opener. Cause for concern in Detroit, or is that an aberration?
We'll find out. I think you give the team a good month of the season, let their pitching staff stabilize a little bit after an injury and then a suspension. We'll see how the young kids step up, and we got to hit the ball better. We can't hit the ball worse. We have to hit the ball better, score some runs, take some pressure off the staff.
It is known they can hit.
Yeah, they're going to score some runs, we hope.
So
I'm looking forward to it.
Continue to pitch.
Let's be patient a little bit.
Calm
just get mild.
Down.
Yeah, exactly.
Calm
Stay
down.
Off the ledge.
There's a lot on there. I mean, it was getting pretty ugly there. David, you were working your tail off today. Way to go.
I did a little bit.
Yeah, I like it. And thanks for contributing to another quality-sounding show.
Thanks, Pete.
Sam Ekstrom back there working the phone lines. Thank you very much. Gene, take care. Al Newman up in Alexandria. Pete Wagner, we'll talk to you next week. So long, everybody.